In just a couple of weeks, churches and families all over the state will be celebrating Mother's Day. Yet for those who long to be a mom but are facing infertility, Mother's Day doesn't feel like a day of celebration. This morning, we're connecting with Marilee Bradley in Lincoln, who is now a mom of six, but who first walked a long journey of infertility. Marilee, welcome back to The Conversation.
Good morning. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, so Marilee, a woman in the My Bridge Radio family emailed us recently, just kind of reminding us about the National Infertility Awareness Week, which is this week, and about how she faces the challenge of infertility, and she often feels kind of overlooked and alone, especially on Mother's Day. You know, we talk to you often about being a mom, so people may not realize that before you became a mom, you struggled with infertility for a number of years. We thought it would be a perfect time to talk with you this morning and just bringing awareness to the dynamic around us about infertility. That listener that wrote into us used the words overlooked and alone. So as you think about those years for you, what words would you use to describe how you felt during those years?
Those words are so good and powerful, and I can identify with that so strongly. I remember just having all those feelings in my heart for years. We had infertility issues. We could not get pregnant for 10 years. During those years, I remember reading the story of Hannah. That, I think, is such a touchstone for so many women who wrestle with infertility. And getting past Hannah's prayer to God and hearing at the end, the translation I was reading said, "The Lord remembered Hannah, and she conceived." And that just hit me so powerfully, that the feeling I was really feeling at the root of all of this was forgotten. That I felt like God didn't remember me, that he remembered my friends. He remembered people who already had four kids. He remembered people who weren't ready for pregnancy, but he just forgot me. And I felt like I was being left behind as women were moving on to this other stage of life, and I just couldn't. And I think that alone, that overlooked, that forgotten piece of it can feel so heavy when you're in the middle of it.
Marilee, as we're talking this morning about the challenge of infertility, I'm thinking about how in so many challenges, there are those who would encourage us to learn to be content. How did that thought of contentment hit you during your infertility journey?
This was such a big piece of it for me, because I definitely got that wisdom. And I think I felt that pressure in my own, like, good girl Christian heart, that if this is what God had for me, if infertility was his plan for me, then I was just supposed to submit to that and be okay with that and find contentment in that. And somewhere through the years of it, I realized I needed to find contentment in God's love for me and in God's character and in how God made me. And part of how God made me was with a deep, burning desire to be a mother. And I think I had to submit that to God about however he wanted to do that. But it wasn't actually okay for me to just say, well, if infertility is what God has for me, then I guess I'm not ever going to be a mom. I knew God wanted me to be a mom, and I knew that kind of discontent in my heart was what was going to push me to do really hard things to get to that point. I think if I had just said, okay, God, well, if this is what you want, fine, I never would have been willing to fill out the mass amounts of paperwork and fly halfway across the world and, you know, go through all the process of international adoption that eventually made me a mom. But it was out of that kind of push of feeling like, this is how God actually made me. He actually made me with this desire to be a mom. And I want to honor that, and I want to respect that, and I want to understand how he wants to use that. But I don't think he's asking me to deny that that exists. I don't think that contentment means pretending that he didn't put this desire in my heart.
Marilee, as you think back over the years of infertility for you and your husband, I'm sure that you had some people that probably avoided the topic with you. Mm-hmm. You had some that stumbled over that topic and did probably some hurtful things even maybe were said to you. Mm-hmm. But then there were some people that said some really helpful things along the way. So what were some of the most helpful things that people said or did?
Probably the most helpful thing people did was to listen, to allow me to talk about what we were going through, and to create kind of a non-judgmental space where I could say how hard it was, and I didn't feel like I had to pretty it up for them. And I think those friends who gave me grace, that maybe if I could not summon the emotional energy to go to their baby shower, they understood that. That was such a gift to me. That was so helpful. When I had friends that got pregnant, they were really careful about maybe just sending me a separate little note or message so that I knew about that before the general public did. did so that I could kind of process it in my own heart before having to have that experience of like, what is my face doing? Am I making a happy face? Because part of me feels devastated. You know, it's such a complicated thing and a complicated dynamic in relationships. So having friends that really wanted to understand it and didn't ask me to make it happier or better for their sake, that was a huge gift.
Merrily, a few moments ago, we were talking about the most helpful things that people said or did during your infertility journey. Let's talk about what you did. What did you do that really helped you through this time?
I had to work to give myself grace and to give myself space to feel what I needed to feel. I don't really like my feelings a lot of the time. They feel really uncomfortable to me. And having to sit in them, to not just move immediately to how do we fix this with infertility treatments or how do we fix this with adoption, but to slow down and just feel what I needed to feel, to grieve what I needed to grieve, to ask God what He wanted me to understand through this process. That was really tough. I didn't want to do that, but I think that was the hard work that allowed me to come to a place of healing so that even when we became parents, that child didn't come into our home as a Band-Aid. He didn't come home with a job to do where he was supposed to make me feel better and, you know, heal this hard infertility stuff in my heart. He could just come in and be a baby and be a kid, and we could accept that because I had done the hard work of grieving my infertility. But that takes time. It takes space. It takes intentional time with the Lord. But that's where I'm so thankful that the Bible to me feels like an infertility handbook. Like, it is just so full from beginning to end of mentions of barrenness and the pain of infertility that this is something God understands and I think He uses intentionally in the lives of His people.
Merrily, several organizations that focus on infertility share that 1 in 8 couples struggle with it. You and your husband were in that statistic, one of those 1 in 8 for a number of years. That struggle can bring a lot of strain on a marriage. So what are some things that you and Brian learned that really helped you as a couple during that time?
We've had so many conversations over the years, but we're a little bit removed from that. So I said, now, looking back on that, what do you think about, what do you remember from that time? And he talked about that for me, I needed to grieve within the context of a community. I needed to find other women that understood what I was going through. And for him, in some ways, he needed to find time alone to work this out with God, to grieve his own losses. But he said the hardest thing for him was feeling like he just wanted to fix it for me. He just didn't want me to feel so bad. He didn't want me to have that pain, and he felt like he would do anything to try and fix that. But then also, he had his own ethical questions. He had his own stuff to work through of, do we pursue this avenue? Do we pursue this avenue? And I was always the gas, so he had to be the brakes a little bit about what direction we were going to go, which I think created more conflict even in our marriage as we dealt with our infertility. It was a difficult time between the two of us as we wrestled through that, but I think it was also a beautiful time of us figuring out how God wanted to use this desire for parenthood He'd given us.
Merrily, as we're talking about infertility and the struggle of infertility for with couples, it's not unusual for couples to have both the man and the woman get tested and find out kind of where the quote-unquote problem is. That can create some interesting dynamics in relationship if we're not careful. How do you process that? What's a healthy way to think about infertility and maybe where that infertility comes from?
You know, a couple generations ago, if two people didn't have kids, just those two people couldn't make kids. And that was understood and accepted. And now we do have this desire for answers and treatment plans and how are we going to fix this? And that does come down to pinpointing which of you is the problem. And it's an interesting thing because I think even as you're grieving your infertility or if you're talking to friends about it, that's a question people will literally ask you if you know what's wrong and who is it. And I think that in some way just kind of goes against the one flesh of our marriage. If we have an infertility problem, then we have it. In some ways, it doesn't really matter whose problem it is because there is no other hypothetical marriage where this person could make kids with somebody else or that person could make kids with somebody else. We, as one flesh, have this infertility problem. And I think processing that means accepting that that's the reality and knowing that there are going to be unique dynamics for each of you, that one of you may feel that guilt more heavily if it's your own body that's broken. And so we want to give love and grace and compassion to each other, recognizing that the impact is going to be different depending on which one of you may have that struggle.
Merely in facing a long-term struggle like infertility, you know, we can struggle with the waiting and the not knowing. Sometimes we can think, you know, it'd be a whole lot easier if we just knew that it wasn't ever going to happen. I was never going to have kids and I can move on. What perspective helped you in the waiting?
Oh, I have so often thought if I could see this current version of my family, like I would not have wasted one tear on those infertility years. I probably would have enjoyed them more if I had known, okay, this is what's coming for you. Catch up on your sleep. You know, you're going to have six kids. But thankfully, that's not how it works. And that working through that difficult process of infertility, I can only speak for myself. But I think God very lovingly, like a skilled surgeon, looked into my heart and saw this idol of fertility and just scooped it out, just lovingly, gently said, nope, that's not how your life is going to go. Because I always wanted to be a mom and I wanted to control that. I wanted to make little me's that I could send out into the world. And God knew that that was not going to be what was best for me, that he had things for me to learn. And I am incredibly thankful for that now, because I think God used in my life infertility to make me the woman that he wanted me to be, that I have been humbled in ways I wish I wouldn't have had to have been, that I have learned empathy for other people who struggle with infertility. I've learned so much in my life because of that struggle that I can see why God used that, even though at the time it just felt incredibly weighty and painful. But I think learning to ask God, okay, what do you want today from me in my infertility? What is it you want me to learn today, to know today about your character, about who you are, about what kind of woman you want me to be? I think that's the perspective we want to have, even though that can be so difficult in the middle of that pain.
Merrily, you were just sharing about how God worked in your life through the waiting through infertility. What else did God use in your infertility journey to help you grow into the woman that he intended you to be?
I think infertility made me a stronger person than I would have been otherwise. It gave me this burning passion for motherhood and an understanding that it was not going to come to me the easy way, the traditional way. And I think that's what it took to get me to be the kind of advocate that my kids need me to be now. That's what it took to get us motivated to pursue international adoption and then to pursue foster care, to do all these things that are outside of the box of traditional family building, because that's what God asked of us. That he said to us, this is what you want to do. I'm not going to bring that to you in the way that seems easy or how everyone else does it. And I've been thankful for that. I think it's made me a different kind of parent because I had to go through that refining process even to get to parenthood.
Merrily, you know, it's very appropriate for churches to celebrate moms on Mother's Day, yet those are very often hard days for women who are struggling with infertility. Some even choose to never attend church on Mother's Day. What are some of the things that churches can do to come alongside couples struggling with infertility?
We actually attend the church we attend now because they offered an infertility support group. That was what got us in the door of that particular church, that we thought, they get us, they care about who we are and the struggles that we're going through. This is going to be a place where we are understood. And I think creating those kind of spaces for people who are struggling can be such a huge help. But I do think that Mother's Day time, I think every infertile woman has a story of pain involving church and Mother's Day. I have heard so many horror stories about this, and I have my own, to the point that there were several years where we just didn't go. And I want to extend grace to women who say, this is actually just too hard. I am committed to church every other Sunday, but this may be a Sunday where I'm going to spend some time alone with God in prayer or in fasting or whatever feels most healthy for me in my relationship with the Lord. But if this day is too hard, then it's too hard. And I think that's okay. But I think churches can make that better by acknowledging the many mothering roles that women fill, right, even who aren't biologically mothers at that point. Because I think so many women may never be mothers biologically or through adoption, but that doesn't mean they don't have a mothering role to fill within the body of Christ. And I think we want to honor that. And also to recognize that Mother's Day is hard for a lot of people. It's hard if you don't have a good relationship with your mom. It's hard if you have a wayward child. It's hard if you've had pregnancy loss. There's a lot of people who are struggling that day. And to give some kind of acknowledgement of that can be a blessing to all of those people.
So, Marilee, it's been a very, very insightful time to talk this morning about the struggle of infertility. So thank you. Mm-hmm. We know that there are couples in the MyBridge Radio family who are struggling in that situation. Before I let you go, you know, thinking back, what did you experience about God during that time that you may never have experienced if you hadn't gone through it?
I really feel like the Bible came alive to me in a different way. So many stories of the Bible came alive because they felt so relevant to me. I mean, Hannah felt so relevant that it would be okay for a woman to beg God and even bargain with God, things that I didn't feel comfortable doing. I saw Hannah do, and I thought, God can hear that. God can accept that. And it gave me freedom in my relationship with the Lord that I had not felt before to be honest about the desires of my heart. I saw that through the Psalms. I saw that through Job. I loved reading Job because I thought Job is so bold. He is willing to say things to God that I didn't think were okay to say. And I think that was the beauty for me. And I think that has continued to bear fruit in my life, to be bold with God and to trust that he loves me and he has a good plan for me, but that I may not always understand it in the moment. And it's okay for me to have feelings about that. It's okay for me to wrestle with that and struggle with that. That God is not asking me to make this pretty for his sake. He's not asking me to just immediately say, okay, fine, sure, for his sake. But if this is something he's put in my life, he expects me to wrestle with it. He wants me to wrestle with it for some reason, that that's acceptable. And I just don't know that I would have learned that any other way. And it's given me a boldness that I'm incredibly thankful for, and I think changed the way that I experience my faith.